Blog Talk Radio.
To another version of Sports Tonight, brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. We are Princess of Water Heater. Log on to bradfordwhite.com. I'd like to welcome our Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hendler, almost a member of the days of the Flyers and the Flyers made the playoffs, almost days of the Stanley Cup. And Roger, I'd like to welcome a special guest, a good friend of mine. He's doing a fantastic job for the Tampa Bay Storm, head coach Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, good evening. Welcome to another excursion.
Hey, Tommy, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing great today. Lawrence, there was a great practice out there today, and tell the folks out there about the next game up in Jacksonville.
Yeah, you know, every time we go to Jacksonville, it's going to be a tough battle. They got the likes of Aaron Garcia back. So, it's going to be one of those games where the guys going to really have to pay attention to detail like we always been preaching all the way through this year, and just nail down our assignments and just out with another victory.
Hey, Lawrence, how about that? That is the toughest building to play in, I think, in the whole AFL. The fans are almost right on top of you up there.
Oh, yeah. It's always tough. You know, they have a lot of – they have a great fan base. We're expecting them to have a big crowd Friday night. And, you know, our guys just got to be really, really into the game and paying attention to what we've been teaching them all week long. And, you know, we're gonna come out of that thing with a victory. I think we've got our plans, and the guys are very upbeat coming off a victory last week. So, you know, we just want to carry it over and keep going.
Well, I'm very pleased with the focus of the team. Obviously, they've had a lot of success early here in the season.
The guys are very focused. We're very focused. The guys are actually it's a fun bunch to be around. I tell you, they're very committed. 2 days out of the week, the offense and the defense, they lift weights 6:30 in the morning, and the guys are really buying into what we're trying to do. So,
great.
Not really surprised of the rewards that they're reaping so far early this season.
I know that Philadelphia game, Lawrence, that's the best game I've seen you coach, and the best game that Stern played over about 3 years. That was a great football game.
Oh yeah, it's a credit to our coaching staff too. You know, the guys have really done a great job getting our guys prepared during the week. Coach Kate's done a great job with the secondary, and Coach Hovan's done an awesome job with the defensive line. So. And good credit to my offensive line, offensive coordinator, Doug Miller. He's done a great job with our offensive line. I think the reporter for the Soul kind of compared our offensive line to the 1990 Dallas Cowboys. So,
oh,
you know,
wow!
That's a credit to those guys and the awesome job that they've been doing this so far this year.
Tommy,
yes.
It's that time.
All right, Lawrence, here's your mystery guest coming up. The mystery guest, sign in, please.
Lawrence, how are you doing today, buddy?
Jim.
Oh, he got it.
He can't do this every week in a row.
We're building up his confidence, guys. The Frank's going to stomp him in a couple of weeks. We're building up his confidence right now. Jimmy, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you for having me on, guys, and I'm glad to be able to be on when you're talking with Coach Lawrence Daniels. That's a true pleasure.
Oh, my God. Is this I'm watching the Magic game now, and I'm saying, Jim, I remember the time you took me to on the bus trip with late Coach Mark, and we're going through that wonderful, bad building, Amalie Arena.
My wife will be here. Yeah. Hello?
Yes,
oh,
sir.
Go ahead. I'm just finished, Coach. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That
you know, family, got to take care of family issues that make any difference. When it happens, you got to take care of it, right, Lawrence?
Yes.
you got to be able to balance it all. Right now, that's what I'm doing. I'm balancing it all.
The team really looked sharp on Saturday night, and it's much sharper than I've seen them look in a while, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, the guys are, it would take the offense a little time to catch up with the defense. And it was just a matter of time that the guys would actually start to actually click in on the offense side of the ball. We really dialed in, I say, especially the first half of the game. We didn't get stopped not once. And ended up going 35 points the first half. So, with our defense playing well and our offense starting to show signs of playing, looking like an arena football team, a good arena football team, that combination is very deadly. And the caliber of guys that we have, skill-wise, we'll be able to make a lot of plays on the offensive side.
Well, that was the best I've seen the offense play all year, and Randy Hibbert had it. He had a great game at quarterback for you guys last week.
Yeah, Hibbert has really shown a great deal of signs of improvement. He's playing at a high level. And, the weapons around him really, really helped him out a lot when I think the last week I said he was a work in progress. Now he's progressing the way we thought he would. That's why we named him a starting quarterback.
Wow. I mean, his pinpoint passing.
I know about 5 years ago, Tony Graziani was like the number one quarterback in the AFL, right? And I remember when the Soul got him, maybe it was 6-7 years ago now, and it was like a big deal. Is the quarterback, I know, we talk about college and the NFL, is it the same way in the AFL where the quarterback is the key to everything on the team?
It's the way the game is designed. You have to have a guy that can that can place the ball where you need the ball, and you can put as many playmakers around a guy, but he has to be able to actually be the captain of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And the quarterback position is very vital in arena football.
I'm going to second what Wall said.
Yeah, well, you know, if you really think about it, and you look at the teams that are, you know, the better teams in this league, they have a guy that can manage and captain the ship. So Hibbert is our guy, and he's doing a great job so far. And, you know, I just hope that he continues his success because of the fact that we have a lot of guys around him that are playing at a high level. And as long as we go as far as Hibbert goes, and he's doing a great job and paying attention to detail and actually performing very well on the weekend.
Hey, Lawrence, we got the AFL Dean of Media Relations, Jim Robinson. Jim, talk about us any great experience you had with Lawrence, as Lawrence was a player up there. And I know you got a couple good stories for us up there.
You know, I have a ton, but the first one that really kind of pops in my mind is his chase to 1,000 receptions. He really was never a stat guy. He knew at the end of the game if he made an impact on the game. It didn't matter if it was 5 catches, 80 yards, 12 catches, 110 yards. He knew he made an impact on the game with his play. So, you know, everyone else around me would ask, you know, it's my job to keep up on that stuff. So they'd ask, and Lawrence would see me, and he'd just nod his head ever so softly and slightly and put his hand up and go, "I don't want to know." Well, finally, we're getting pretty darn close, and he goes, "All right, Jim, how many do I need?" And lo and behold, he only got two. I think it was 2 or 3 sessions that game, and came up short. And we ended up going out to San Jose the next weekend, and he set the record that weekend. And I just remember getting on the bus after that game, and him looking at me looking at him, and we're like, "I shouldn't have told you," and he's like, "I shouldn't have asked."
I remember that.
That's a
I remember
good story.
That because you're quite around the offense up there, and that is it getting close? Is it getting close? He says, "Getting real close up there." You know, I don't tell anything out the white way from the forum up, so I was hush hush about that. And Lawrence, I still got that picture you made that catch for 1,000 up there somewhere in my den up there. I still got that picture. I copied off the internet.
Man.
That is an awesome picture up there. 1,000 catches as you the player. Jimmy, any more funny stories about Lawrence up there? As Lawrence Samuels as the player now.
You know, I don't know about funny stories. You kind of caught me off guard asking that one.
No.
Didn't know quite sure what we would talk about. You know,
any good stories?
The thing that sticks out in my mind was he was just a professional. He went about his business. He worked hard. He worked hard in the off season and came in prepared. And you know, there's going to be ups and downs throughout the season, and he would navigate those really well. And that was the biggest thing with me, was just, I guess you would say, an even keel. There weren't really high highs and really low lows. You know, you get excited when you win, you get down when you lose, but he really kept it along a medium there. And to me, that's impressive, because you see a lot of guys, some guys can lose their composure. Some guys get too overexcited, and they, you know, they kind of ignite the other team. And I just, to me, not only that, but you don't see a lot of guys nowadays. Realistically, now I think of two guys that could be considered kind of Ironmen. Lawrence went both ways, and that's hard to do. And you know, now we got a guy that the coaches are grooming to take that role over, and Michael Lindsay, you know, he's getting his reps on offense. He's the one of the top kick returners in the league, and they're putting him into a position where he can excel and relieve some guys and get some more snaps on defense. And then another guy is a guy we're going to face this weekend up in Jacksonville, Terrence Smith. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot of true Ironman guys, and to have seen it done and to see him excel on offense and defense That was a pleasure. I mean, I could go on with – there's tons of funny stories, but I'd rather talk about some of those things.
Oh, definitely. Lawrence, you have another special mystery guest. Mr. Guest, you want to sign in, please?
What's going on, Coach?
Hey! That's
hey,
my first one. We're sorry. Good.
You got an easy one this week.
Yeah.
Well, we got the two legends of the Tampa Bay Storm Media Relations Department, Ben and Jimmy. These guys are legends, Lawrence. You know, I mean,
Jim's a legend.
Very much so. They are legends, and they're good guys.
Yes.
You know, and I throughout my whole entire career, I've been around good people. So, you know, that's just a blessing in itself, just to have those two guys that I can rely on, especially with the media, and you know, Tommy yourself and Frank and all you guys. You know, it's a true blessing to have you guys in my life, and at this time, and this is a very special time in my life, being, you know, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm, and you know, I just want to continue having success and for us guys to have a great time socializing together. So. It's been a pleasure so far. So, and I'm going to do everything in my power to try to keep it going and keep our guys motivated so we can get that sixth arena bowl we talked about.
I, as I said before, I keep on telling Ben, we're going to get that, play football in August, and drink that lousy coffee in the break room. I'm switching the tea, guys. Lawrence and everybody, I'm switching the tea. I'm not trying that coffee up there. And before
I
left the office.
Tea today. I had some tea today.
Like we had those coffee machines before the RNC came in. That was great coffee. You put it in there, the coffee came on nice, and then and the Republicans messed up our coffee machine, Lawrence and Ben and everybody. So I blame it on the Republicans. I blame it on those guys up there and that. But Lawrence, Ben's going to give me a defensive back next week before the Orlando game. You know, they always do the woo. So they want me to do the DBs want me to do the woo next week with them. So some good luck.
Yeah, Tommy's gonna break down the huddle, the DB huddle.
Yeah, it is.
They forgot me this week, and I talked to Chris Smith. And said, "Hey," he said, "Tommy, where were you?" I said, "I'm looking for you guys. You're on the other side of the field." He says, "You're gonna be with us next week." I said, "Okay, thank you."
That might be a YouTube moment right there.
Oh, no. Don't put that on film, Ben. Oh, I just can't wait for – I think we're going to come back, go up to Jacksonville, beat the crap out of them, and we're going to come back with this 4-1, and it's Storm Orlando week all over again, guys. I'm getting excited for this season. I've been excited. I'm getting more excited right now.
What's that?
No, I was just saying the team's looking good. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, you know, and that's a credit to everybody in our organization. You know, we've made a lot of moves. We made some moves today, and the likes of having Joe Hills back on the field is going to be an added benefit for us this week. So, I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Wow, I can't wait either. Well, Lawrence, always the best for you. You're a good friend of the program, good friend of mine. Always the best. Great luck. Travel safe up there. Come back down with a W, sir.
Yes, sir, I will.
Good luck.
You have a great week. Good luck, Lawrence.
Good luck.
Great week.
Expect my usual text on Sunday.
I can't text, Lawrence. I don't know. I haven't talked to text yet. I'll call you Sunday.
Yeah, come on.
I don't know.
We'll have a tutorial.
There you go.
Text well, 101.
Good
I
idea,
don't
huh,
text
Frank? On Tommy?
That's right.
A tutorial.
That's right.
First, you'll be probably showing how to turn the thing on.
That's right.
I can't turn this thing on. What are you
talking
about?
I know we're going to go continue talking about the Storm, but I just saw a blurb on the NHL that a Lightning player is out for the year.
No, Ben Bishop's out for the three games in the playoff. I like to welcome in a program, good friend in a program, good friend of mine's and ours, Roy Cummings. Roy, welcome to the program. Sad news about Ben Bishop. If you saw the game on TV last night, sad for Ben right there.
Yeah, I'm anxious to find out, you know, what the long-term prognosis there is, what the injury is. Clearly it's some kind of a left arm, shoulder possibly, maybe wrist. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm not sure, Tom, do you know of any details? Did anything come out
just
today,
detail-wise,
about what it is? And
Our great public relations department with the Tampa Bay Lightning said it was just upper body injury. I didn't want to elaborate on that.
Got a headache. I can tell you that. You got me going again on the NHL. And you know how much I love the league and how much I love the game. Upper body injury stuff is ridiculous. You know, I think fans would pay a pretty good price for tickets. Have a right to know what these players are dealing with. And in this case, you're talking about a goaltender who's probably the key to your to any kind of playoff success that you hope to have. And I think it's a darn shame that we don't know exactly what it is. Again, you know, we know it's some kind of a left arm thing. We know it could be a shoulder, could be a wrist, could be, we're pretty sure of that. I guess I shouldn't say we know for sure, but, somehow we've got to find out, what's this team facing now? I mean, I know they've called up a goalie today, so are they facing a situation now where they're going to have to go with Lindback to start the playoffs? I mean, we have to know these things. If that's the case, all of a sudden, I look at the Lightning and I say, this goes from a team that, in my opinion, had a chance to go a good two rounds at least, maybe even three, and to a team that I would say maybe has a shot at going one round at best. And because I just haven't been that impressed with Anders Lindback. I mean, I remember when they got him, he's always, he's been a backup goalie his entire career, and don't mean nothing to indicate that's changed. And I got to feel that the team's going to play a little bit differently in front of him. I can't imagine they would play with the same confidence and the same aggressiveness that they've shown. So, you're right, Tommy. It's an absolutely devastating injury and a loss. I mean, this team has really been hit hard by injury this year. I'll say this, they've been very resilient. I mean, I know that's the word that they talk about the most. Mm-hmm. And they proved that they could win without Steven Stamkos. They've proven that they can win without Marty St. Louis, although that's not an injury situation.
Right.
They've proven they can win without Vincent LeCavalier. And now they have to prove that they can win without Ben Bishop. That may be the most difficult thing to prove of all, but we'll see.
I just hope for one thing, because Anders Lindback played great last night. I know Toronto's a desperate team for trying to make the playoffs out there, but he stood up great last night. And I still think it's a team effort. Look at Roy. I'm going to go back. Roger knows this. I'm going to go back away. Remember Bernie Perrant, and when he got hit that eye injury, guess who stepped in one season. Wayne Stevenson stepped up big time in that same season. Got the Flyers to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, and look what happened in 04, Roy, down here, because Hobby Boone and John Graham. John Graham was number one, and Hobby Boone came in and took that role from him. So I think it's a big game for Lindback last night to win. Big game to shut him down. Now, can he do it against Philadelphia? We'll have to wait and see tomorrow night.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's certainly a big confidence booster for him. And, the thing is, we've seen it before where he's had games like that where he shined, and but then he comes back and he doesn't carry it through consistently, and that's an issue. But you're right. We'll talk about all the other guys. This is an opportunity for Anders Lindback to prove that he can be a number one goaltender. He's in a big situation here down the stretch. They're trying to get into that second spot and win home ice advantage. And really, let's face it, it seems like it's pretty much locked in at this point. But they're trying to fend off Detroit, who could catch him and drop him into a wild card spot. But so he's got a lot to do here in the next week, the next few days, actually, before the playoffs start. And the good news for the Lightning is that they've got a week here, probably, possibly even maybe more, maybe 8 days, to get to find out what the deal is with, how serious the injury is with Ben Bishop. And if they can somehow get him healthy, they got some time here. So we'll see how it breaks down. But, as I said, it's a difficult deal for him. It's just a little bit more adversity for these guys to deal with this year.
Yeah, you're 100% right about that. And because when you look at it this way, you know, Toronto's a desperate team last night, and they didn't win. But Roy, here's a highlight of the day for everybody, right? I was down there great to see the Storm practice outside. You went inside. I got the information for a sound card for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Did have a chance to catch up with Vinny LeCavie. I said, Vinny, how's Enzo doing? People don't know Vinny has a dog named Enzo. I always kid him about that. How's Enzo doing? I said, well, Bugsy's doing great. Capone's doing good. Bugsy got away today. And make a long story short, and Vinny says, Enzo hates the cold weather. He hates the cold weather up there.
Roy, the point you were making about the injuries, you know, with teams and coaches, I'm with you 100%. And what annoys me during the NFL season is the coaches that won't even give you, quote-unquote, a nugget until, what is it, Wednesday when they have to declare the injury list. What difference does it make?
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, they're not required to give out any information regarding an injury until Wednesday. And usually it's late Wednesday because it's after the practice and, there's a certain time frame by which they have to, you know, put in their injury report. So it's, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But, again, you know, I'm with you. I just don't understand it. I mean, you know what? You're hurt. I suppose in the NFL, you know, we've got proof now that there are teams out there targeting injured players and the injury in particular. Maybe they're trying to protect them. But, you know, if you really think that this is going to present you with any kind of a competitive advantage or competitive disadvantage, well, then your brain is smaller than a pea. I'm sorry. That's just not true. It just doesn't happen. You either play well or you don't. You're either hurt or you're not. You either fight through it or you don't. The other team knowing what the injury is just doesn't make any difference whatsoever. And it's just unfortunate. But it's something we have to deal with. And you know what? At some point, it would be nice if one of the commissioners in those two leagues, I don't know what the deal is in the NBA, but it would be nice if someone, whether it's Roger Goodell or Bud Selig or whoever replaces him when he moves out in a year or so, would have the guts to say, look, I'm sorry, I said Bud Selig, I don't mean that. I meant Gary Bettman.
Would have
the guts to come out and say, look, we're not going to play this shell game anymore. You're going to tell people what the injuries are because fans have a right to know when they're paying the ticket prices they're paying, to know whether player A, B, C, D, all the way down to Z is healthy and if he's going to play in that game. If I'm a fan of a team, and I know that the player is not going to play that night, it might affect whether I want to buy a ticket or not. And I think fans have a right to know, whether that player is going to play and what the results are. And it goes a couple of different ways, too. You know, if I happen to be a big Anders Lindback fan, and I know that he's going to play Thursday night for the Lightning as opposed to Ben Bishop, I might want to buy a ticket because I want to go see Anders Lindback play. You know, most people
Great
look
point.
At it the other way around, but I want to see that. And I just think fans have a right to know if the ticket prices we're paying now for these events, what is going on and who's healthy and who's playing and who's not. You know, if it's a coach's decision that a player's out of the game, that's one thing. When it's an injury, I think fans have a right to know what the injury is and what the probability is of him actually playing. And I just think there needs to be a lot more transparency in all that.
Thank you for saying that. I couldn't say it even better this way because the fans are, like you say, the fans are paying the top dollar. And I remember, Roy, one incident, in the old days of the Lightning, I remember at a Saturday morning skate. Remember the time Mario, wasn't sure he was going to come back or not? So at a morning skate, Mario said he's playing. So I'm limping down the Lightning PR office with my bad wheel. It says, Mario is playing tonight. I never seen phones ring off the wall in the ticket office. Phones ringing up there. I never seen fingers move so fast. Computer say, Mario Lemieux is playing tonight.
Well, you're right, and that, you know, again, it makes a big difference to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're talking about one of the stars of the game, I think it has a major impact on ticket sales, and maybe that's the reason why teams don't want to release that information because they're afraid it will hurt ticket sales. But I think by the same token, the fans have a right to know if they're going to see the star player or not. And if it's a lesser level player, if it's a, you know, if it's a backup or a reserve or something like that, fans still have a right to know that as well. You know, again, it's I just think you know, as much as they're trying to do for the entire entertainment experience now,
right?
You know, where it's nonstop music and entertainment throughout the game. You don't have 1 minute of silence at these events anymore. I would think someone could make a little bit of noise and tell me what the player's injury is and whether he's going to play or not.
Exactly. My pet peeve in hockey, if they get that fiddler there tomorrow night, again, oh, my God, you don't put that at a hockey game, the fiddler there. It's okay you put him there for the baseball game, for the Rays is great, or for a Storm game. You don't put the guy, you know, if Flyers are in tomorrow night, you don't put the guy for the fiddler. Could you imagine that fit off immediate writing back to their papers? Now we got the Lightning's got a fiddler in between the periods right now.
Again, it's a total entertainment experience, Tommy. They're trying to, you know, cater to obviously someone. I'm not sure who, probably not me.
Not me, probably.
But, they're trying to cater to somebody. And you know what? Everybody's got their little traditions. There's some people that think that in Boston, the singing of Sweet Caroline is ridiculous and it's comical. And I'm sure there are people that don't like the fact that, you know, the hockey song is played and there's two hockey songs. You know, if you're in Calgary, it's you want to ride the Zamboni and you've got the old Gary Glitter song. And, hey, everybody's got
hockey.
Things they like and don't like. And you know, there's traditions everywhere. And if that's part of the Lightning, if they're trying to make a part of the tradition, Philadelphia wants to write back about it, fine. Beat us in the playoffs and you can pop up. That's the way I would look at it.
Well, I would like to see him play that thing in Philadelphia and then try to retrieve it from where it would be put.
Hey, how about the Bucks preseason schedule? Come on, you're going up to Buffalo to see Mike Williams up there for the schedule this release for the exhibition schedule.
Yeah, real excited about that. You know, at least we get the Buffalo in September. August, as opposed to it'll just be turning to winter about that time, I think, up there. So we'll probably get the change of seasons, which will be just fine. But yeah, excited. You know, it's preseason. Don't have to travel too far. One trip out of town, really. Jacksonville's a quick drive, and you come back. And you know, it's they got to play games there again. That's a whole other issue. Talk about preseason football, but Buffalo. That's you know what? That'll be an interesting little battle there. Possibly could have a couple of young quarterbacks fighting for playing time in that game for the Bucks, and maybe, you know, get a chance to see how they perform against, you know, a young guy like DJ Manuel. So we'll see how it works out. But the exhibition schedule's out. It's an interesting one. Jacksonville, you know, trying to get out of the depths of the league, and Buffalo trying to do the same. Tampa trying to do the same. It's good competition. I think maybe if you look at it, the three teams on the schedule, you got Miami, Washington, Jacksonville, Buffalo, all four of those teams, along with the Bucks, teams that are trying to find their way again. And I actually think it's a pretty good schedule for them to try to get an idea where they, you know, how they measure up, at least at that level. I don't think anybody thinks the Bucks are at the level of the top tier teams in the league. And this is an idea to prove or show that maybe they've got the depth to be one of the better teams in the middle of the pack, at least. So this may be
the last year of four preseason games if they can get the players to expand the playoff.
When Tommy mentioned it, that was one of the first things I thought of. I said, "Yeah, the schedule came out. I'm sorry, it's not just two games." I'm kind of pulling for that, to be honest with you, because you know we all know that the preseason for all these games. For all these leagues is very long. Spring training is horribly
long,
but I think the reason for it is obviously the pitchers have to stretch their arms out. Even still, you have you're having so many issues there. The hockey's probably the shortest. Seems just about right. You know, sometimes they have a few too many games, but football, no question. I would love to see. Look, even if they don't go to an 18-game schedule, I would still like to see the preseason drop by at least one game, maybe two. Mm-hmm. You know, just for the sake of eliminating some of these almost senseless games, and you know, that go on forever. You're talking about, you know, you're playing players that you know you're going to cut 24
yep.
hours later, and I suppose it's an opportunity for the players to get some tape, but you know what? They tape everything now. They tape practices, and I think you're seeing a lot more teams go to controlled scrimmages the way the Bucks did with the Patriots the last couple of years. I don't know if Lovie Smith is going to do that, but you're seeing a lot of teams go to that, and I think that can replace exhibition games if it's done properly, and also allow the fans in for free on those practice events. I think that's a good idea, and be a good step forward for the league if they could do it, I think.
Sure. I think that'd be great. You have to blame the late Art Modell for that, Roy. The old doubleheaders, the old Cleveland Stadium, the old preseason doubleheaders up there. So I know he was real big on the exhibition football, and I think you're right. They should cut it down to two games. You know, the control practices up there. This way here, A, you have to save on the travel. You don't have to, you know, play meaningless games. Your guys are going to be there in that team that 1 week and that. So the people – and the guys are in great shape right now, 24/7 working out. They're in super shape. Not like the days in the 60s and the early 70s, these guys were out of shape. These guys are in tip-top shape, and they're ready to go 24/7 right now.
Well, you're right, and you know, one thing I wonder if it's more of a, if it would push the agenda on fewer exhibition games or delay it, you know, is the whole fact that the way the off season is structured now for players, they're so mm-hmm. limited at how much actual on field activity they can get. You know, they can only be in the facility 4 days a week in this off season program that they just started on Monday, and only for 4 hours a day, and only two of those hours each day can be dictated by the team as to what the players are doing. The rest of the time, they're kind of on their own, whether it's film study, whether it's weight work, whatever it might be. And I wonder if that is got some teams thinking, hey, we need these exhibition games to get more of a look at these players. I hope not, but I could see if a coach came to me or a GM and said, hey, you know what, we need that third exhibition game, that fourth exhibition game, because look, there's 10 players here that we're trying to decide, you know, are they good enough to make our team? Is he good enough to make our practice squad? Can we keep this guy? Do we need to waive him? And I just didn't get enough of a look during the off season at him because we're so limited now in how much time we can actually have these guys on the field. So I wonder if that's a detriment to what we're all asking for here, which is fewer exhibition games. And it very well may be. And, you know, I'm a little surprised that there wasn't more talk this particular off season about changing some of those off-season rules. I know they don't want to go, you know, start tearing up the old CBA too quickly and rework it, especially with the victories that the players believe they've gained. But you know what? Talking to some players like Josh McCown came in with the Bucs, he's not a big fan of this particular off-season schedule himself now because you know, here he is coming in with a whole new, you know, offensive coordinator, having learned a new system. He's got to be ready to go on September whatever it is on opening day. And he's not going to have a lot of time to do it. So, you know, they really want this off-season work to be able to learn the system and practice it and get a feel for the new teammates that they have. And the two extra weeks you get of this limited off-season program work is good, but it's certainly not enough to get you into a comfort zone with a whole new system and a whole new bunch of teammates for a lot of players. So I'm surprised there wasn't a little bit more talk about that. I will be surprised if there's not more next year and the year after and some changes aren't made.
Roy, question on the way they've cut things back, do you believe that's the reason that there's been so many serious injuries this last year because they aren't getting the hard press during practice and that some of them may not be working out as properly as they should?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the reason for the injuries. My guess on the injuries would just be that the entire speed of the game is ramped up again, and I don't think your body toughens up from getting more hits necessarily through training camp. I'm not sure that is going to help players avoid injury. I think the speed of the game And let's face it, it's a human body. We can tune it up as much as we want, but certain parts and depending on, you know, the makeup of each individual player, you know, some guys are just more susceptible to injuries in certain areas. You hit a guy right, he's going to go down. I do think, however, that it was a big contributing factor to some of the sloppy play that we saw, especially early on last year and, you know, throughout the season. I mean, there's an awful lot of sloppy football being played. And, you know, you're chasing perfection and you're never going to reach it. But I think the way the systems are set up now, it's an even far more less attainable goal than it was before. There's just there's just very little chance for teams to really perfect what they're trying to do and get it right. And I think it's hurting the game in a lot of ways.
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, the Eagles had one of the best seasons of any team in the NFL as far as injuries were concerned. And the people, the experts, so to speak, credit to Chip Kelly and his supplements and smoothies and diet and everything else.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm not going to knock what he's doing, and if it works for if that's what everybody thinks is the magic elixir, then everybody needs to adopt whatever Chip Kelly was doing in Philadelphia and do it for themselves. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, I know for a fact, looking at the Bucs, I mean, they've gone from a situation. I remember, look, back in the day when the Warren Sapp, John Lynch, Derek Brooks days, Jose was running the food, the chow line there. And let me tell you guys, it was the worst food you could. I mean, the food was exceptional. Don't get me wrong. It was exceptional.
Yep.
But it was the least healthiest stuff you could ever imagine a pro player eating. And now, let me tell you, it's you know, grilled chicken, very dry, dry rice, salads, fruits. I mean, that the whole, you know, regimen, smoothies, stuff like that, the whole diet regimen has completely changed. And it's you know, I'm not sure it's preventing injuries anymore. I know there's more injuries now than, you know, probably than there were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But again, I just think it's the speed of the game. I don't think it has a lot to do with. I think play and you know what, if anything, I think these supplements and the dietary changes and things like this, if anything, I think they're probably contributing to the injuries because players are far more finely tuned. These guys are they are wrecking machines right now, and I think that that little extra edge of speed and strength and everything else that comes with it can put it all together, and I think it just makes every player a little bit more vulnerable to injury than it does make them less susceptible to it.
Do the Bucs have their own kitchen staff, you know, with their chef and everything at Buccaneer Place?
Yeah, they do. They have a dietitian in charge of everything, and strength and conditioning people kind of work in that program, and they have a specific staff of chefs that do all the work.
They prepare it right there on site. Yeah, because
yeah,
I know
absolutely.
The Eagles do, you know, at the NovaCare. I mean, and they even feed the employees. But I noticed the Falcons, they have it catered, and they have an on-site chef, you know, from the catering company, but they bring it in, and I guess then they, you know, they heat it up, because I see a lot of times the coaches and the players will come out and they'll even eat in the locker room, you know, out of one of those travel containers. And I just think it's better to sit down in a dining hall environment and eat.
Well, that's what the Bucs have. They have a dining hall environment. They have a dining hall. And they can eat in their lounge, or they could bring it into the locker room. Seldom do you see that happen, but they do have their own dining facility. They have their own kitchen staff. They have a big kitchen. They do all the stuff, all the prep, and all everything right there. So it's all in house, pretty much. And you know, you also have the occasional you know, rookie hazing thing where you know, the guy's got to go out and get the donuts or go get McDonald's, and you'll see guys, you know, bring McDonald's and stuff like that in on occasion. They cheat, but you know, for the most part, I'd say, you know, 90 meals out of 100 or maybe even more, they're eating right. And you know, it's what you do as a you know, as an athlete in this particular century. But again, you know, 10 years ago, guys, I'm telling you, Friday was, you know, fried catfish day, and they, you know, Riddell Anthony's family was, you know, coming in, and they were doing the cooking in these vats of grease, and it was I'm telling you, it was there was no, yep. You know, there was no attention paid to dietary restrictions of any kind. It was whatever I can eat, as much as I can eat it, and nobody cared what kind of arteries it was clogging or how much fat it was putting on you. They weren't paying attention to that stuff.
Right.
It's all changed. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Roy, it has. And I think that's part, you know, look, almost every player on the team averages $1 million now. So these guys are investments, you know. It's run more like a business. The NFL, I think, has been very slow to come around to it, you know, but it's a business. And you treat your players as assets, and you try to protect those assets. And, you know, if you run a line of trucks, for example, you're going to make sure that those trucks are all finely tuned so that they can go out on the road, stay on the road, they don't break down, and they can, you know, carry the payload that they got to carry and get you back home. With football players, they're going to make sure those guys can get out there and play. You know, a lot of the same things are happening in hockey locker rooms, you know, baseball locker rooms, things like that. You wouldn't know it sometimes by looking at some of those players, but very seldom anymore do you see a flabby body in an NFL locker room. You know, even the big bodies, as they call them, the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, most of those guys are pretty well cut. A lot of them are 315 pounds, but a lot of them are pretty well cut too. They're certainly in tremendous shape. That's to say the least.
Okay, well,
Roy,
you know, there was a great comment today, Roy. Before Roy gets away, Tommy, I'm going to address this.
Okay.
A great comment on Sirius NFL Radio today. A fellow from the that's in the Army called in, and he talked about the vocabulary, terminology, you know, as far as what goes on in the locker room, because, you know, they're really trying to clean things up, and it's all for one for all, okay? And he made and so did the fellows on the radio, I think it was Jim Miller and Bruce Murray, they thought that he made a great comment, a great analogy with the Army, where, you know, you're working as a team when you're in the field, and also when you're off duty to represent the Army. And I think that's what the message that the NFL is working on to try to straighten out. Do you agree with that?
Well, I hope so. You know, I don't like the double standard. I don't like that certain race of people can use a certain word and define it in one way, and then if another race of people uses the same word, they can define it. It can be defined in another way. I don't like that. I don't think it's fair. I don't like some of the language that I hear. I'm appalled by it, to be honest with you, in the locker rooms. You know, I certainly don't want to make it a racial issue, but, you know, I think the difference here is that in NFL locker rooms, you know, you're talking about, 90% it's a black environment. And,
right.
You know, I think that's one reason why maybe they feel comfortable, you know, with that cultural difference in that locker room and feel like it's, you know, it should be in there. I think it's different, obviously, in a hockey locker room. I think a lot of that would be looked at, you know, very questionably. Baseball locker room, there's another greater mix there. But I think when it's predominantly black in a NFL locker room, you can see why the majority might say, hey, you know, if it doesn't bother us, why do we have to change it? You know, if this is how we talk with each other in our, you know, off the field in our groups and that kind of thing, well, amongst our friends, oh, okay, well, I see that. But again, I mean, I think there's just a bigger social issue here. And I would just like to see some of the players who seem so adamant about being able to retain the, I guess, the, I don't know if it's the right or the okay to, you know, say whatever they want and call each other whatever they want, you know, in their own environment there. I think it'd be good if they could see it in a different perspective. Again, I just happen to believe that, you know, that's a word that, you know, I think we all know what we're talking about here. I just think it's
right.
A word that it just brings up, to me, the most horrible of all connotations. It's something I think
right.
would be, you know, we've spent hundreds of years now trying to get away from in our society,
right.
and I think it
right.
just continues to, in a way, I think it almost mocks that effort to try to to try to even the playing field for everybody. And, you know, it's like two steps forward, one step back. And,
right.
And I don't like that.
No, I agree with
Roy, always a pleasure to have you on, sir. Have a great week. We'll have to go tee it up one of these days, sir.
Yeah, hopefully we can. Lightning are going to delay that opportunity for us, but we don't
yeah,
mind that
I
a
know.
Little bit. So, but that's okay. But, hey, glad to do it, guys. Anytime.
Always
enjoy
a pleasure.
Enjoy the time.
Thank you, Roy.
Sure, and,
take care,
we'll,
Roy. Have a great
week.
Okay,
all right, guys. Thank you, Roy,
care.
For coming on. I'd like to welcome to the program. This gentleman is the dean of professional baseball. I know this gentleman for 30 years, a good friend of mine. And he does a great job as director of public relations or with the Tampa Bay Rays. I know this guy for many, many years. Always honor to have him on the program. I'd like to welcome Rick Vaughn. RV, how you doing this evening, sir? Always a pleasure, sir.
Hey, Tommy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Just unfortunately, we lost that game in Kansas City today, but it's still early season right now, Rick. It's where,
yeah, I'll take you know, I'll take one out of three there. It's been a house of horrors for us, and they really have they've got a really good ball club. I don't know why they haven't been better than they have the last year or two, but they beat us with our own stick, man. They play great defense. They pitch pretty darn well, and they're pretty good at manufacturing runs. They don't have a lot of power. You know, we don't have a lot of power. I think they're a little bit better than we are at manufacturing runs with the speed they have and using that ballpark to their advantage. And so I feel pretty good. We only scored 4 runs in 3 games, so I'll take a win out of that.
Definitely. Rick, what you guys have done, the Tropicana Field, I can't thank you enough. I took a walk out there Sunday. Great, great, great job out there.
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of like if you go to a ballpark nowadays, you just about have to have that 360 circulation where you can walk around the park. And Tropicana Field's never been an easy stadium to get around in. I think this really takes a lot of that away. And then also has that common area in center field. And I think you see that in a lot of ballparks too. I mean, it really works well for us in our spring training facility in Port Charlotte. We have that 360 circulation, and then we have a tiki bar out in center field, and most people end up, you know, at some point out there, and it becomes more of a social thing, you know. So so far it's been good.
I wanted to tell you, Rick, a quick story. We have a friend of mine it's a friend of mine's son-in-law, but we've gotten to know him, Doug Hamilton, the golf pro. He just had an experience doing a TV promo up in your old area in Baltimore with one of your old friends, Scott Garceau. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did it. He did it in one take. And I would love to see this because I'd like to see what went on behind this camera, you know, with Scott Garceau. Scott's saying, man, oh, man, you did that in one take. And it's a fundraiser, and I know Frank will be happy to hear it's a fundraiser for a police officer that was killed in the line of duty.
Oh, no.
So, but I thought that I'd jump in on that because Doug will be on probably a little while, and we'll probably talk about it, but I mean, you can relate because you've known Scott a long time.
He's a pro, man. He's been up there for a long time, and he's always been so smooth. And he makes everybody feel comfortable. That probably had something to do with it. Just working with Scott is such a pleasure. I miss a lot of people up there, even though I've been gone for, 17 years. But
ouch.
There's still a good bunch of them up there, and Scott's one of them that I really miss.
Well, you know, it was funny. Don's not on tonight, but when he was doing the sports final at CAU in Philly, I was at covering an Orioles game one night. It was when Fred Lynn hit the home run to win the game walk-off.
Oh,
and
Memorial Stadium, sure, I remember that.
Memorial Stadium, exactly. And I asked Fred, what was the pitch? And then I sent it over to Don, and it was on CBS radio around the country the next day. He asked Fred, what was the pitch? But things have changed, haven't they, Rick, as far as communication goes?
Just a little bit, huh?
Oh, man.
I think we're getting too old for those communications up there. But Rick, I think it's a great acquisition that we signed Jose Molina. And I was thinking, coming back from the ballpark the other day, remember Steve Carlton had his private catcher, Tim McCarver. And that's
right.
What David's doing, and that's what David's doing to Jose Molina. He's like a player's coach out there. And my pet peeve, you get these talk shows down here in Tampa, you know what I'm talking about, and they start banging on Jose Molina. And I'm not going to call him up because I know the guys, Rick, and I was going to say this for the show tonight. It's the same thing as Steve Carlton with Tim McCarver. Exactly the same format because Steve was young. McCarver was up in his years, and he was his caddy for the whole time up there. And the Phillies at that time had Bob Boone, and probably Joe was watching the same thing growing up in Hazleton.
Yeah, it's possible. The pitchers like to throw to him because, you know, now it's a pretty well-documented thing, but he does frame the pitches really well. He gets them a lot of strikes, and they like that a lot. And, you know, he calls a good game. He is very smart behind there. You know, the one thing that he gets criticized for, which is definitely unfairly, is throwing out runners. You know, we did not do a good job that last year. That really was not on the catchers. That was on our pitchers.
No,
we really did a very poor job of holding runners last year, and we didn't give our guys a heck of a chance to throw runners out. So he got some criticism for that last year because his numbers were down and throwing out runners, but I don't really think it was his fault. He's a good, positive guy to have on the team. It's good that he's there, and, you know, he'll be catching, you know, less games this year with Ryan Hannigan there, but they're two of the best there are, really, at calling a game and framing pitches, blocking balls and stuff.
But it gets my pet peeve when these, you know, these radio personalities down there, they say, get rid of Molina. And I coming home the other day, Sonny from the ballpark, I says, why would you do that? It's the same situation as Tim McCarver played with the Phillies and had Bob Boone as the regular catcher up there. I said, these guys don't know their baseball. Mike said, no, don't call the stations up. Just don't get wound up in that. You know, like Rick, I get wound up like that. I got to just, you know, but it's the same situation up there. But I love the effort. Like, we got Grant Belfort back, all the infield back. This team is going to go far into October right now. I know it's April, Rick. We're going to go far in October, and you're going to get a souvenir on that finger after all this year. I'm saying it right now.
Well, I hope so. I hope you're right. I think when you can pitch and you can catch, you know, we pitch pretty well and we can catch it, and that's can keep you in the, you know, keep you in the hunt. You know, I think our offense is, I wish we had a little bit more offensively than what we have, but, you know, you would give that up for, in some cases, for the defense. So, you know, we really do a good job of, you know, around our whole team. You know, we had our four infielders that are all back, and hopefully they're going to be together for a couple of years. They were all finalists for Gold Gloves last year. And so there's a lot of, you know, and with Escobar and Longo on the left side of the infield, you know, ground balls to that side of the infield normally get taken care of. And, you know, that's a great feeling. You get a lot of double plays that way. And I think our pitchers really, you know, it gives them a lot of confidence to throw strikes because if they hit it, I think they feel pretty good about guys running it down.
And Rick, I know, as a manager, couldn't have anybody better.
Oh.
Yeah, Joe's a one of a kind. You know, we've talked about him, you know, on the show a lot, and he, you know, he's all about, you know, he's really all about giving players, you know, you have to do it with accountable players, but he's all about, you know, it's different. He does it a lot different than most managers, but he's all about giving them a lot of freedom. And again, you can't do that with people that aren't accountable, but he thinks the best way to handle them is he wants them to be themselves. He wants them to be totally comfortable on the ball club. I mean, we always talk about this, but, you know, when we go on the road, we don't have a dress code. You know, he doesn't, I mean, you can't wear shorts or T-shirt, but they're really, there's no real, you don't have to wear a coat and tie, you know, you don't have to wear a suit or anything like that. I mean, when we travel, you know, we travel most of the time, we're traveling where nobody even sees us. You know, we get on the bus and we go to the airport, we go right to the plane on the tarmac, we get off, we get on a bus, we go to the hotel. A lot of times it's 2:00 in the morning. And
right.
So his thinking is, why should I make these guys wear what I want them to wear when we're not even going to get seen anyway, and they're just more uncomfortable? I want them to be comfortable. I don't want them thinking about anything other than what they have to do to prepare themselves to play. And so, you know, he always, when he meets with the team at the beginning of the year, he tells them that, you know, he really only has one rule for the position players and one rule for the pitchers. And for the position players, the only rule he has is you got to run hard to first, and the rule for the pitchers is you've got to field your position. You've got to be a good defender at your position. And that's it. There aren't really any other rules. And I think our players have always responded well. I mean, I knock on wood when I say this. You don't see too many of our guys getting in trouble. We really have very few discipline problems. The other thing that Joe likes to do is he'll identify maybe four or five guys at the beginning of the year, and he calls them his bulls. And he'll sit down with those guys, and those are the guys that are really help enforce the atmosphere that he wants there. And he really, you know, he feels like if he's finding out about problems in the clubhouse and things aren't working right, he doesn't want to know about every little thing that goes on in there. He doesn't really care about that. If it's something where he needs to address something, he obviously will. But these guys that he gets as sort of his bulls, those are the role models. Those are the guys that set the tone. They carry Joe's message, and it's worked really well for 6 years now. And it's a joy to be around it. I mean, we have a lot of fun. If you ever saw what our clubhouse looks like after every win, it is like, I'm not kidding you when I tell you, it's like a high school team winning a state championship game every time we win. And they come up with different ways to celebrate, but it's always for about 3 or 4 minutes. It's crazy how it is in there. And they are just, it's so cool to watch it because they're like little kids. And it's so fun to watch them jump around, and they have a bunch of little rituals that they do, and it's really refreshing to see it. And it's something that we've been doing now for, that's been going on for about 4 years. So, you know, we've kept that tradition going, and then I read in the paper, you know, and he's always done his themed dress trips that we have, you know, where he'll come up with a theme, and we'll dress, you know, it may be camo one trip, it may be a salute to the lightning one trip. It could be, you know, I think we did a Bucks trip. We've done all, we always do an all-white trip. We've done like 40 of them over the last 6 or 7 years, and everybody goes along with it. They have fun, and it's just everybody enjoying themselves and not taking anything too seriously. And as a result, now I see around the league where other teams are doing it, and, you know, where they're having theme trips. I mean, we had Letterman jackets 1 year that we wore as a group. We had Letterman sweaters, I think it was last year. And so we've done blazers, you know, we've done just amazing things. And who would have ever thought that that would work with a major league team? But it does, and it has worked for us. So it's a fun place to be. And, you know, of course it helps when you've won 6 years in a row, but it's a real fun place to be right now to work, and I really love working for Joe.
How do you compare Joe to Earl Weaver, who you also worked with?
Well, you know what? I guess they actually probably have a couple of similarities. I mean, you know, Joe lets his coaches coach. You know, you know, Joe will get involved when he feels like he needs to. Every once in a while, you'll see him work with the outfielders on their footwork or something. You know, he'll grab somebody, maybe that he sees something on somebody's swing. But for the most part, he lets the coaches coach. And I think Weaver was pretty good at doing that, too, when it came to during spring training and stuff. You know, Earl's, you know, and then, you know, Joe is very, obviously, very big into the statistical analysis. Well, you know, back when Weaver was managing, I think he was the first manager to come up. We used to call, when I worked there, we used to call him the Weaver stats. But he was like the first manager to come up with the to keep the statistics of how each hitter did against each pitcher. And so, you know, he would have them on index cards. And so, you know, Earl was way into that before anybody was. So I think that's another similarity to Joe. Joe was into some of these metrics way back before other people were too. So I think they have a couple similarities there. But other than that, that's probably where it ends, you know, because Earl was, you know, was a pretty confrontational kind of guy. And Joe is about as far away from that as you can get.
Oh, hey, Rick, I tell you one quick.
What's that?
Two great managers, both of them.
Yeah, they are very different in their style. Very, you know, very, very different. But I can't think of I don't know when Joe leaves, or whenever he does leave, it's going to be really hard to adjust to anyone else.
No, I know because Rick.
If you take Rogers' evaluation, Don Henner, so speaking with him at the moment, if you take Roger's evaluation, you know it's got to be good.
That's right. Oh my God, welcome, Don. Rick, I remember I told you this story, right? When Mike Socia and Joe were walking through, you probably see me talking to Mike and that, and Joe said, "Who's your favorite manager?" I pointed to both of them. Oh, Rick, I tell you one thing. You make it such a pleasure to go down and see a ball game. I can't thank you enough for all the work you've done for the Rays, for myself. I mean, this is coming from the heart, Rick. You know that. And the Rays will always be my baseball team to the day I die, and I can't thank you guys enough. Best PR staff in professional sports and baseball, Rick.
Well, appreciate it. We love having you there, Tommy. You know you're always welcome.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Thank you, Rick, for coming on.
Rick, thanks a lot. Have a great season. Hopefully we'll see you down at Tropicana Field. I'll get down there for a game or two.
All right. Hope so, guys. Have a good evening.
Great to talk to you, Rick. I'll be there Thursday night when the Yankees are there.
Yeah, the late Mr. Henderson has arrived.
Okay, Frank, do your mystery guest now. Mr. Henderson has arrived.
Yes, Mr. Henderson.
Family was important. He was with his family.
That's right.
That's true. But we've got a guy who's been waiting on the line here for about an hour, 26 minutes.
No.
While he had a nice dinner. This poor man has been waiting up there in New Jersey.
He's a very
important man,
dinner.
Mr. Russell Peltz.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mr. Peltz?
I'm doing fine. I hear an old familiar voice.
Hey, you know, you've been my idol. When I grow up, I just want to be like you.
Yeah, me
wow.
too. Me too.
Ooh.
I hope he does grow up.
You spoil all
your
the
program,
fun,
sir. Walk
Russell,
to
you have a big one coming up on a Saturday night, huh?
What's that?
You have a big one coming up on a Saturday night.
Yeah, we're probably going to cut into the Pacquiao Bradley crowd in Vegas at the MGM.
Nice.
No, I got a pretty good prospect. Of course, you know, old-timers like me, we're always looking for the next pretty good prospect. A young kid from Camden, New Jersey named Jason Sosa, who's weighs 130 and has knocked out his last six guys, two of them, the last two actually with body shots.
Uh-oh.
Russell, I got to tell you a quick story. When I was in high school, I used to go to get Warrior tickets, you know, from Mike Gianarella at the Warriors office and then the Sixers office. But when I was in high school, it was the Warriors. And Eddie Gottlieb said to me one time, "I'd like you to become a boxer. I want to hook you up with Blinky Palermo." And I had no idea who Blinky Palermo was.
He was right where his manager. What are you talking about?
I know who he was now, Don. I didn't know when I was 16, 17.
I've been around long enough to get screwed by Blinky Palermo.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Russell, you're sort of on the upbeat right now. Seems to me like boxing for television has helped a lot again, but it seems like things are on a very, very good note on the upgrade for boxing.
Well, I think the business is showing signs of a pulse. Whether or not it will ever get back to where it was as late as the 70s and 80s, I don't really know. The slow dying of newspapers has really hurt boxing. And I explain this to people if you're an Eagles fan and you picked up the Bulletin or the Inquirer in the Daily News and wanted to read about the Eagles, you'd see a boxing story and maybe you'd read it and you'd get interested. Today, the Eagles fans are going to the football websites and the Sixers fans are going to the basketball websites, and the only people going to the boxing websites are the boxing nerds. So if you went to an Eagles game and you asked 60,000 people who the heavyweight champion of the world is, they're not going to say Sonny Liston. They're going to have no idea.
We talked about that last week. I really think that's exactly right. I mean, first of all, there's so many divisions. I think that's one of the things that really hurt boxing more than anything else. When we were kids, you knew every weight division and you knew every champion. Now, they're not only not from this country, the most of them, but at the same time, you don't know what the weight division is and, you know, who they are.
And there's too many in each. You know what it's like if the basketball season ends and there's no playoffs and every division winner claims he's the champ? Well, that's what's happening in boxing. There's no playoffs.
Right.
So that's nobody. I mean, when I was a kid, I could name all the lightweight champions backward from Joe Brown in the 60s to Benny Leonard in the 20s. I don't even know who the lightweight champions are today.
Wow.
There's so many of them. And I'm supposed to be an expert. So what does the average sports fan know?
Well,
no clue.
He had a terrific bout there last Friday night at up at the Leocuras Center with I don't think anybody going there could have expected that grand finale with Stevie and Amir. That was really a tremendous fight.
And every time I try to convince the local fighters to fight each other, they give me nothing but static. The formula for Philly always has been and always will be Philly against Philly. Whether it's Giardello against Benton or Briscoe against Hart, that's what made this town a great fight town. And unfortunately, the guys who are managing and training fighters today, they don't want that. I don't want to fight him. He's my friend. I don't want to fight him. I know his trainer. We train. I mean, Charlie Scott and Sugar Hart, who were two legendary welterweights from the 50s, they trained in the same gym together. They lived a block from each other, and they fought one of the most brutal, legendary fights the city's ever seen in 1959. But I don't seem to be able to get through to today's managers and trainers. You know, they say, well, you're a dinosaur. Boxing isn't like that anymore. You know, it's passed you by. I said, guess what? Boxing was a lot better off in the years I'm talking about than it is today.
Well, Russell, just think about all the fighters that they would spar with, the people that they worked out with, and they'd wind up fighting them maybe a year later or 2 years later. Oh, yeah, he sparred with during his whole training camp, whoever it may have been.
Right. I used to watch some of the greatest fights at Frazier's Cloverlay Gym. I saw Michael Spriggs and Dwight Braxton fight there weekly years before they unified the light heavyweight title. I mean, there were guys that used to come to the gyms. And it's a true story. There were fans that used to come to the gyms and never come to the fights because they'd see everything they wanted to see in the gyms.
Right.
It's just the way it was.
My dinner just arrived. I gotta jump off. I'll talk to you later. Russell, nice to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure.
Take care, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Russell, how many cards do you have set up in the next couple of months? And with the summer season coming, will you have any down in AC?
In AC, I'm not sure. I know we have... We have our next NBC Sports Network card at the Pocono Downs area in Wilkes-Barre. Mohegan Sun has a casino there.
Right.
And I know we're up in Bethlehem August 9th on NBC. Hopefully after this Saturday at Bally's, I know there's one June 14th at Bally's that I might be involved with, and hopefully one in July or August at Bally's.
Well, that's good. That's... I mean, at least you've got a lot of cards, a lot of events coming up, which is very encouraging.
Well, we're hoping that the reopening of the arena in South Philly, now not to be confused with the one in West Philly years ago, but the 2300 arena at Swanson and Rittner, which is reopening soon. We have a show there in May, and they bought out Foreman Mills, which was the building attached to them. They're building a sports bar as part of the complex, and going to put balcony seating in there by September. It'll seat 1,700, which will be perfect for what we need.
Yeah.
And so we're hoping to make a success out of that.
Well, that's fantastic,
that's
Russell, because I'm a boxing fan myself. I remember sitting with my grandfather on Friday night watching the ABC had the boxing match of the week. I still remember coming to that. Would we take like a national network to have every Friday to have a boxing show or a boxing card every Friday night like it was in the 60s. It was fantastic in the 60s to have that.
Well, the closest you get to that is ESPN. You're not going to get that on free television anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because they're just complaining about lack of advertising and lack of sponsorships, even though a sport like boxing
mm-hmm.
will get much higher ratings than a sport like tennis or golf, but yet sports like tennis or golf are able to attract millions of dollars in sponsorships that boxing can no longer attract.
But boxing is such a great sport. You know, you can watch ESPN, and it's such a great sport. I remember Schick had that back in the 60s up there. And that. Another question, is this all these titles and heavyweight, all the title positions? Have I heard the world of boxing around all these people?
Oh,
the
sure. It's killing it. There used to be 8 divisions, 1 champion in each division.
Wow.
Now there's 17 weight classes
and
up to 4 champions in each weight class. So you've got 68 potential champions as opposed to 8. So if I'm having trouble following who's who, just think what the average guy who goes to a Sixers or a Flyers game, they have no clue. And
you're right. I mean, it's difficult.
Exactly.
You need a scorecard to just keep tabs on who's got what title.
Sure, and even in the last 10 years when newspapers still counted, you had a lot of young people coming in and becoming like the sports editors who were young enough that they didn't understand the rich tradition of boxing that Philly had.
Oh, no.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't think, to my knowledge, the Daily News or the Inquirer, the only coverage they gave of that fight Friday night, and that fight was a fight for the ages. I believe in sports briefs in the Inquirer they mentioned that Cunningham beat Mansoor. I'm not sure the Daily News even had a line about it. I just don't know. Because, honestly, I don't read the newspapers anymore.
And since Bernard Fernandez retired, we had him on when he was retiring. I mean, he was one of the great boxing writers of all time. But he's no longer there.
Roger, he does contribute to our Saturday night program.
Okay.
We have him on monthly to talk about fights. And yeah,
great.
He did take a couple months off and go back to New Orleans, where he's from. But he's been on with us religiously every month.
Great.
Yeah,
oh,
Bernie still writes for some websites. And you know, we're doing the best we can. If every month we could have a show like we had Friday night at Temple, eventually the word would get out there. But it's not always that easy making those kind of fights.
That's there too, isn't it, Russell? The Leah Cora Center for you.
What did you say?
It's a great venue at the Leah Cora Center.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. The fight, my only problem, my only argument with my partners on that show was that the show should have been filled up with local kids in the preliminary fights.
Right.
Instead, they brought in a lot of out-of-towners, and I argued, and then I gave up. And, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but for that kind of fight, we should have had a lot more people there, and we would have if we'd been able to put more of the local kids who sell tickets. There would have been a buzz in the gyms and things like that, but it just wasn't to be. But, I mean, I can't argue with the 2 television fights. If NBC doesn't renew our contract after seeing those 2 fights, then there's nothing we can do, you know, any better than we did. You couldn't choreograph a better show than we had Friday night. You just couldn't do it.
The funny thing is that Stevie many times would have taken a hard shot like Amir was giving him, and he may not have come back out, but boy, he came out really throwing those punches and took command of that fight all the way to the end. And, you know, we've had him on the program, on our Saturday night program. Amir, we've had on the program many times. Those guys really brought boxing back alive as far as we were concerned.
Yeah, and I don't know what your experience is, but in another lifetime I was a sports writer for the Bulletin, and I've found that boxers are among the nicest athletes because they don't get spoiled. In other words,
mm-hmm.
they're not pampered in high school and college, and get everything they want like football and basketball players do. They come up the hard way, so when the press does talk to them, 99% of the time it's a big deal for them because it's something they're not used to, and they hunger for that. They're not spoiled by it. They don't say, get out of my face, or I'm not answering that question. They're happy to be with you.
Do you think you'd be using anybody locally like the new Ray Robinson or Jerry Tiberi, who's coming up out of both coming up out of camps down in Wilmington, or any of the other guys that there are local?
Oh no, we do that all the time. That's what we're doing in May. Joey Tiberi fights mainly at Dover Downs.
Right.
There's Ray Robinson is a world class fighter.
Yes, he is.
But he is under contract to the people down there in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
Joey should stay there for a while because there's a big, he's a tough kid, but there's a big difference between the talent level in Delaware
mm-hmm.
for the Delaware airborne fighters than there is for the kids in Philly. I mean, a kid in Philly who's 6-6, six wins, six losses, that's like a 13-0 guy in other
right.
states.
Wow.
There are some, it's just the way it is. You know, these kids in Philly don't play Muhlenberg and Lehigh and Kings Point every week. You know, they're playing Boise State and Ohio State
mm-hmm.
and Florida. So their records might not be what some. Listen, the oldest trick, any promoter worth his salt can get 20 straight wins for a guy if
sure.
that's what you want to do. If you want to insult the fans, and you want to charge them $50 and $75 to see cowboy and Indian fights, we can all do
mm-hmm.
that. But that's sooner or later the fans are going to say, what am I? You know, people complain about spending $6 or $7 to go to a movie. We're
mm-hmm,
charging
right.
$50 and $75. People criticize me because I'm a fans promoter. I mean, what kind of criticism is that? You know,
right.
you need the fans. You just
sure.
you need them. And if we have more shows like Friday night, I mean, everybody should wake up after Friday night and say, hey, maybe Russell knows what he's talking about. Maybe we should make more local fights.
Sure.
So hopefully it'll sink in. We'll sink in. The problem,
you know,
the other problem is
that, Jason Sosa's moving up in class with this fight. How do you think he's going to do against Michael Brooks?
You know, Michael Brooks is a tough left-hander from Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Last time out, he lost to Carl Dargan from Philly, which is no disgrace because Dargan is very talented and he's a lot bigger than
mm-hmm.
Sosa. He's left-handed. Sosa's been getting great sparring from a left-hander named Tevin Farmer. Sosa's trainer doesn't think the fight will go, listen, 4 or 5 rounds. If Sosa can knock out Michael Brooks, who's 10-1 against some fairly decent opposition. Never, if he can knock out Michael Brooks, that's a statement. That's
right.
a real statement. The trainer, Chino Rivas, has a terrific stable of fighters. He's one of the best new face trainers around here, and we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, I've seen guys get knocked out with body shots where they just fold, but Sosa's last two guys, that one with a left hook to the body, one with a right hook to the body, these guys were paralyzed. They couldn't get, it wasn't like they got up at 11. I mean, they were still on the floor a couple minutes after the count.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty impressive to me. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty impressive.
How
so,
about,
you know,
on your undercard, you've got Anthony Bergen versus Frank Trader. How do you think that one's going to go?
See, that's the kind of fight I want to make. That's the kind of fights I get criticized for knocking off local kids, but
sure.
I mean, if a fighter loses a fight and he disappears, then he was never a fighter in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The problem I have is that the people who buy the fights for ESPN, HBO, Showtime, whatever, they're only interested in the records.
Mm-hmm.
I joke that Archie Moore or George Benton couldn't get on television today because,
right.
you know, Benton lost 13 fights and Archie probably lost more than that
mm-hmm.
because they're only looking at, you know, 25 wins and no losses. So, like I said the other day, what you're getting is not the best fighters on the premium networks. You're getting the fighters with the best records. It doesn't always equate.
Right.
I mean, Giardella lost. What did Joey Giardella
lose?
25 fights?
Yeah, about that.
It's like the old slogan, the best deal's not always the best deal, right?
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, he didn't always want to get in and spar. He loved to sit there and play cards with the guys around the gym too.
when we were selling out every month at the Blue Horizon in the 90s, we were at the point where I could put kids in a 6-round fight. One kid would be 3-7, and the other kid would be 4-5, and as long as I knew it was a good fight, it didn't matter. I didn't have to worry about some kid who sold 100 tickets because we would announce a show and we'd be sold out. So the people were doing that because they knew they were seeing good fights every month. That's what I want to get back to, because 9 times out of 10, the kid who sells all the tickets can't fight.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You have to match him accordingly, which means you can't always make the best match because you don't want him to get beat by a kid who just brings his warm-up suit and his gloves to the arena.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dilemma.
Are you doing anything at the Blue Horizon now, Russell?
No, the Blue Horizon's been closed now. It was shut down by the city in 2010. There was a deal on the table to buy it about 2 years ago for $6 million, which I thought was high. Mm. And actually they had approached me about doing a monthly series there, and then the deal fell through.
Oh.
So it's just sitting there idle, like the best boxing arena, the best small club arena in the world is
right.
Just sitting idle on North Broad Street. It's a shame.
It'd be like
just
a historical
shame.
Landmark in Philadelphia with all the boxers, the people that have walked through there.
Right. Yep.
I know you being around for a long time, you probably remember Dr. Chris Panarella. When Chris was going to Temple Dental School, he used to go over there and box, and that's how he made his money, his way through school.
Really?
And I used to take, Chris and I used to take our sons up there to the Blue Horizons quite often to see good fights. It was really an enjoyable night.
It was just a magical place, and when you can just concentrate on making good fights and don't care and not worry about which fighter is going to sell tickets, it's a pleasure.
A pleasure. And, last Friday's card. I keep going back to last Friday's card, but it was such a terrific card. You even had one of our local boys up there, Edner Cherry, who's put on the show quite often.
Well, I signed Edner Cherry in November. He had just gotten had to buy his way out of a promotional deal with people that he didn't think were taking care of him. And then he got a new trainer in Dan Birmingham, who was just a terrific trainer. So we figured we would not throw him in the fire right away, but it took a little while to get to the fight. And then, lo and behold, in the 7th round, he gets that nasty headbutt that costs stitches. And now he's going to be out another 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but, I signed him in November, and I didn't meet him until April. But, he's a nice kid and a good fighter, and I think he's going to go play.
He's a good family man. And Dan, I got a lot of respect for Dan Birmingham. He's done a tremendous job the whole time he's been down here. And Michael both do a great job at the 4th Street Gym.
When I heard he was taking over Cherry, I said, this is just great news. I had a fighter years ago who was world champ named Charles Brewer, and we went up one night to fight Antoine Eccles at Mohegan Sun on Showtime, and I had seen Eccles fight for the title, and the guys in his corner were like homeless people. It was just a joke, and I said, oh, this is going to be fun. And then we get up there, and I see Dan Birmingham's in the corner with Antoine Eccles. I said, oh, my God. This is not what I bargained for. And Brewer knocked Eccles down 3 times in the 2nd round, but there was no 3-knockdown rule. And as soon as the round was over, I said, the fight's over. There's no Birmingham's going to revive Eccles, and Brewer's going to get excited. And the next round, Brewer got knocked out after having him down 3 times. I mean,
wow.
Birmingham's just a terrific, terrific trainer. I mean, he had Winky Wright his whole career.
Mm. Sure, and Jeff Lacy.
And Winky Wright's a terrific fighter.
Yes.
Did I read a story in a paper a couple of years ago, Russell, that is your daughter involved with you in the business now, or she has been for several years?
No, she's not my daughter. She's a Temple grad named Brittany Rogers. She actually, her first show on September 30th, 2011, ironic because my first show was September 30th, 1969, so it was the same date, and
right.
She's a Temple grad, and she keeps me going because she's got unbridled energy, and I always ask her, are you getting disgusted yet? She said, absolutely not. I talked to her. I said, maybe I'm going to quit. She said, you can't quit something you love.
Right.
So she, you know, she's really pumped up for these fights that we're going to be doing in South Philly at the arena. And she's really going all out. She made a she helped me close a deal with the Sugar House Casino as one of our sponsors.
Wow.
Great.
So that's going to really help us a lot.
But that was a great story. I guess Bernie did it, and I thought it was fantastic. And I get the paper on digital every day on the computer when I'm not up there. And I read that from start to finish because that was a terrific story about the two of you.
You know, I told her, and this is the truth. If she'd been a guy, I wouldn't have given her a second chance. I wouldn't have even spoken to her. But when I saw her on Facebook. And I read, I didn't know who BAM Boxing was. It stands for Brittany and Michelle. When I heard that she wanted to get into the business, I said, you know, this is pretty cool. I mean, a woman who, you know, to me, a girl. I mean, I guess she's 25, so I still call her a girl. But, you know, this is cool. And she's just... You know, listen, what I know about Instagram and Twitter, you can put in a thimble. And she's brought us into the 21st century. I mean, tweeting and taking care of all that social networking. Me, I was still writing press releases on carbon paper. So, it's old school and new school.
Right. Oh.
But I said to her, I said, listen, Bam, they love you now. They love you now. 20 years from now, you're going to be the dragon lady. So just get used to it. Just get used to it.
And we'll all be 6 feet under.
Yeah,
no,
really.
Don't say that, Roger.
I will.
No, you
don't
say that, Russell.
I will.
Hey, Russell, I had a chance to, like you said, how great boxers are, right? Roy Jones Jr. fought it down here at the Tampa Bay Times Forum up there. And Safety Harbor has a lot of great boxers down here. And after the fight was over, my first professional fight happened about, oh, God, I'll say like 5 or 6 years ago. I sat up real close in that, and I thoroughly enjoyed the boxing and how close it is up there. What's your take about, you know, the Tampa Bay area becoming a boxing market like Philadelphia up in the Northeast?
Florida's always been tough. It's been tough. I mean, Charles Brewer won his title in Tampa, and... I was there. I had Tony Thornton, the punching postman, when he fought. Oh, that was in Pensacola. Yeah, we fought Roy Jones in Pensacola.
Oh, Florida's always from up there.
Yeah, he's from Pensacola.
Right.
Florida has been tough. Like, I live in the winters in Boca Raton outside of Miami, and it just doesn't seem like there's even the Cuban fans don't really support the Cuban fighters. They tried to run shows for a few years at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, and they blew their brains out. It just doesn't seem to, on a steady basis, be a profitable business down there. Hmm. You know, I guess there's just not enough Northeast ghettos like we have in Philly or Detroit or had in St. Louis or New York, places like that. I don't know. I don't think Florida's ever really been a hotbed. I mean, listen, you can say, you know, Arguello fought Pryor there in 82, but those are special occasions. I don't think on a consistent basis that Florida's ever proven that it can support boxing.
What are you on for?
What's that?
But I tell you, it's great up there, but Oh, Russell, you know, I was just telling Frank, I never learned so much boxing in my whole life. And in 23 minutes, this is fantastic. I'm so having a good time learning about boxing up there. But it, actually, I did meet Roy Jones Jr. because he played, because I was working with the USBL team in Tampa, the Tampa Bay Windjammers. And you talk about press releases, that's the old typewriter, copy machine. When he came to, as a part of the Jacksonville team, we had to set up a press conference. And he was so nice. Tommy, anything I do for you? Where should I sit here? And oh my God, it's just great to watch him just, as a basketball player and a boxer at the same time.
Yeah, an outstanding athlete, all-around athlete. You know, I fought him with Tony Thornton. I fought him with Bryant Brannon. And I think Thornton went 3 and Brannon went 2. And,
wow.
A good fighter, really good fighter. I hope financially he's set. I've heard otherwise, but that's another story.
Oh, no. I hope so. Russell, have you played golf at all? It's our pleasure to have our golf pro on. Doug, welcome aboard. You're talking to a legend boxing promoter, Russell Peltz, and Roger, and Frank, and myself. Doug, so welcome aboard. Any tips you want to give to Russell who plays golf? Any tips you can give to him?
Russell's wife plays golf. Russell plays golf under the rest.
Well, this is our golf pro coming on now.
Oh man, guys, yeah,
I play as much golf as Doug boxes.
There you go. Perfect.
All right,
I
Doug,
love it.
What's your tip of the week right now?
But I have a feeling we could trade, though. You could teach me how to box if I taught you how to play golf. There you go.
I'd learn more than you would, believe me.
I'm trainable. let's see. I tell you, we're obviously gearing up for the Masters. I didn't get a chance to see any of the par 3 tournament today, but I know they've had all day coverage, and gee whiz, I think guys have analyzed this, you know, every way to Sunday already to figure out who they like and why, and trying to figure out, you know, who the next winner is going to be. Odds on favorite right now, I think, are Adam Scott, who obviously won last year with no Tiger Woods in the field. Certainly that makes it wide open. I hear a lot of guys talking about Jason Day as a possible champion to this. I've heard Webb Simpson. I've heard obviously Phil Mickelson in the field and a multiple-time winner. So it'll be interesting to see, come Sunday who gets to wear that green jacket. But it's always fun to watch for sure.
How's your course doing up there? Are the members started coming out and start playing right now?
Well, it's been nice that we've had an opportunity to actually be open for just a few days that we can string together here. I know that they're talking about the weekend being in the 70s up here, which is very welcomed to many people that try to just get outside and get some vitamin D. So from my perspective. I know people are starting to contact me about some lesson packages, and we're starting to see some more people, and merchandise is, and everything is rolling in, and it's been good for business for sure. All I can tell you is from the perspective of a teacher early on in the season, get back to the basics, get back to the fundamentals, and I know I stress this all the time with, ball position, aim, alignment, setup, grip, stance, all the things that we do before we, even ever make a swing. Again, so many people try to go to the range and pull out a fairway wood or a driver or something like that and see how far they can hit it. And, unfortunately, it just doesn't really work that way in terms of the game and how we teach. In fact, if you were really going to learn how to play golf and knew nothing about it, the best way to do it would be to learn from hole backwards in terms of, putting and things around the green, back to pitching, back to wedges and moving up through your set, and the driver would be absolutely the last thing you decided to hold in your hand to make a golf swing. So, on a good day, you're only going to hit that driver a maximum of 14 times probably, in your round anyway, how many times are you going to hold on to your putter? So it kind of puts things into perspective that way.
I was just telling Coach Lawrence Samuels before he came on, where the storm practices, the arena football team, there's a golf course right by there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ben Sloan starts saying, Tom, you should play 18 holes when the weather gets warmer, and then you start playing up there. So I was talking to Hall of Famer Derek Brooks and Lawrence were sitting there. We were sitting there just having a good time before, after practice. I said, guys, question of the day is, that's your par three. It's about 120 yards. Today, which day, which club would you take out, a pitching wedge or a 9-iron? And they all said the 9-iron. I said, where would it go?
Yeah.
Both they sit on the green, so.
For sure. You know, obviously knowing how far you hit your clubs is a key ingredient to, you know, hopefully hitting some good shots on the golf course. And, you know, for me, 120 yards, that's your standard gap wedge for me, or 52-degree wedge, and making sure that you feel comfortable with that yardage and making a good swing, you know, is really a key ingredient there. So
that's a putting iron for Tommy.
Well,
you know, the funny thing is, you know, you guys talk about, you know, all these different people that you've played golf with, and celebrities and stars and athletes and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, golf is just such a wonderful way to bring all those different, you know, people together. And you know, whether you're a high school student or a Hall of Famer, you know, there's camaraderie that we can share on that golf course. And you can play the game, you know, for as long as you know, you can stand it for the most part, you know, because the handicap system makes it fair and equitable. And, you know, you guys just talk about your stories that you've had, you know, out on the golf course, and how much fun you've had, and the things that you've shared, and that's what golf is all about, you know, bringing people together and having a good time doing it, you know. And unfortunately, I think over the years we've gotten away from that, and it's been more geared towards, okay, what did you shoot, you know what I mean, as opposed to, you know what, how much fun did you have, or how many good shots did you hit that you can sit there and, you know, talk about having an iced tea afterwards, you know, so.
Oh, exactly, because, I mean, it's just that my dad told me, he says, many deals have been made on a golf course up there. He used to have the railroad open, the old Pennsylvania Railroad would fly down to Nassau in February to play golf, talk some deals, and he'd go to Cleveland in August for more steel worker talks, and that's all the, and I said, when I was growing up, I said, Dad, is that all you do is answer phone calls and play golf? Mm-hmm. So I said, up there.
You know, what's funny is, you know, we do some junior golf stuff, whether it's camps or clinics, and I actually coached a high school team, a local team here for 2 years, 5 or 10 years ago, and I've always used golf as a vehicle to teach these kids life lessons about, you know, what do you do when you hit a ball out of bounds? You know, do you walk up there and, you know, do you drop one and do something that's, you know, against the rules? Or, you know, what do you do when you hit a bad shot? Do you sulk, or do you cuss, or do you throw your club? Or, you know, when you made a five, do you write, you know, a four? Or, you know, like all these different things that, I mean, imagine this, you know, kids in this day and age, all they're doing is playing video games and on their computer and emailing and texting and on their phone. Well, hey, how about this? Go put one of those teenagers with, you know, three adults and say, you know what, by the time you're done playing 18 holes, I want you to tell me three things about each one of those guys that you didn't know before. You know, and actually make them interact with people and talk to people and, you know, get back to some of the things that we've all done over the years growing up, you know, that everybody should do. You know, and that, again, golf is that vehicle that you can do so many things with about life to teach them that.
Very true.
Doug, I tell you a good example. A Rowan Green Golf Club, Frank and Roger was just outside of Philadelphia. So we've blown there while I was growing up there. And I got to be friends with Dr. Rowan Burley, professor, University of Pennsylvania, and Dr. Camby Balderson up there. So we were, you know, I was always playing, was playing with him on Monday up there, and now hitting the golf balls with him, you know, finding golf balls. He gave me a dozen golf balls and that. So then he said, does your dad play golf? So, yeah, he plays on the weekends up there. So, actually, my dad stole my golfing partner away from me. He plays on the weekends up there. he stole him away. If you can't do that, steal my partner away from me. But I know it, that's a great point, Doug, what you're saying, because a lot of the youngsters play with the older gentlemen, and they learned the value of a life lesson, and that you can't strive enough for that right now.
Absolutely, it's critical, because unfortunately we see these youngsters that come to our junior camps, and you know, there's just a level of disconnect when it comes to actually being able to communicate, you know, and interact with people. And hey, how about the biggest skill of all skills when you start, you know, wandering out into the real world of networking? You know. I need this to be done, but I don't know how to do it. Okay, well, this guy over here knows how to do it, and he can help me, but if he can't, then maybe this guy can, and if you actually talk to people, you can actually get to those different places to understand
you know, what it is that you're looking for. And that's, you know, when I first, the very first time I ever called the show, you guys remember, I had the opportunity to play Oakmont Country Club. The reason is because
that's,
I played
exactly
in a golf
right.
tournament and had dinner with the pro there and actually
mm-hmm.
opened my mouth and talked to the guy, and lo and behold, a few emails later, he invited me up to play there.
That's,
you know,
right.
And that's how you get stuff done like that, is you just, mm-hmm. you talk to people, you know, and ask them. And that's a life skill that, unfortunately, people don't really have much anymore. So.
And that's how golf has been, that's how valuable golf is. It's just, fun, you know, the weekend warrior is fine, but, and how many people that I know, all you deal is a man in a golf course. What's the first thing you said? You play golf. Okay, let's play together. Then you're
right.
in a golf course, start talking business deals, and you have dinner and that, and that's how your golf deals are made. I mean, I made several deals already with the Lightning, just playing golf with these guys, setting up the deals for the various venues and that, and
mm-hmm.
then they call up as your golfing buddy up there to go play up there and that. I just
right.
had a lot of great experiences up there and that. And another thing golf is good for, just for relaxation, but it's mm-hmm. always good for the, you know, meeting friends and having a good time with everything. It's a great
Not
way
to mention,
that,
yeah, I mean, the exercise that you might get out of if you actually do walk and carry your bag, or just in
right.
general making golf swings. But, heck, I've played, you know, in the summertime, it doesn't get here till almost 9 o'clock at different points,
mm-hmm.
you know, in peak summer. I've gone out and played 9 holes at 7:30 at night. And how beautiful is it at that point where you go out in nature, you know, like you said, there's a little peace and quiet and tranquility to just, you know, being out there, you against the golf course, and trying to figure out, you know, who's going to win that day. So, yeah, that's a cool aspect as well.
Well, the only bad thing down here, we can't do that at 7 o'clock. We always have thunder showers down here. So basically,
right.
we got till April, May, and June down here. Then it starts a thunderstorm center. But if you play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Doug,
mm-hmm.
it's 95 degrees out here.
Yeah.
Nobody wants
yeah.
to play out there, but which is a
no
good
doubt.
Thing about that. But next time there's a golf show in Orlando, you can stay at the house here, okay? You better come back and stay at the house.
I do. I haven't been to the PGA show, and gee whiz, I bet you it's been close to 10 years now.
Welcome down here. Welcome
great.
Down here.
It's a wonderful place. We ate at a place the last time I was there called Charlie's Steakhouse. I don't know if you ever heard of it. But it's a really nice steakhouse where the waiter comes out and he's got this tray full of meats and it's dark in there and he takes a flashlight and tells you like what cut this is and where it came from and everything else. It was kind of a really nice place, but man, they had good steak there. Golly, Dave.
hey, Russell, are you still with us? Russell, we want to get
I'm
a good plug for your...
You can't make those kind of deals in the middle of a boxing match that you can make on the golf course.
No.
Russell, talk about your match on Saturday night. Talk about your match.
Quickly, it's at Bally's Atlantic City, 7 fights beginning at 7:30, and the main event is a 10-round junior lightweight match between hot prospect Jason Sosa of Camden and the shifty Michael Brooks of Nassau, Long Island. Should be a good fight.
Now, how can he get tickets in that for that?
Yeah, there's still tickets available at the door. They're 50 and 75.
Fantastic.
You know, I was just thinking about the old days growing up when we used to have many boxing gloves wrapped around our rearview mirror in our cars.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, you
oh, they
the
still
fight.
Make them. People still do it.
They still make
people
them.
Still do it. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah. Aww. I've still got mine from the, I grabbed a bunch in 1972 from the Carlos Monzon, Benny Briscoe fight in Argentina. I still have about 3 or 4 pair of them.
Wow. That's a classic, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Benny Briscoe, of all things, that brings back great memories. I was watching used to watch him fight on that Schick program up there on Friday nights and that. That's
uh-huh.
bring back great memories of that. And I remember one day I met Joe Frazier at the Ramada in the Essington up there and that. He was playing in the group up there. And I said, Mr. Frazier, I'm a big fan of yours. He says, all right, where can I sign? You know, that's how great boxing the boxes are up there and that. They're so congenial. They're so down to earth up there and that. It's always fun to watch these guys and see these guys in the behind the scenes up there.
Yeah, like I say, they're wonderful. They're the nicest athletes you can find.
They are. I got to see a fight at the MGM, you know, the newer MGM, so to speak, in Vegas a number of years ago. It was Mexican Independence Day. We were out there for a convention. And, Frank, who were the bosses? I sent you one of the commemorative coins, I think.
Geez, I'm sorry, Roger. I'm blanking on that right
remember
now.
You, but you remember,
yeah, I remember you doing that, yeah. I think it might have been one of the Pacquiao fights. It was one of the Pacquiao fights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right. It was. And I want to tell you, Russell, what an experience when you have Mexican Independence Day, and we said, man, if the Mexican fighter didn't win, there would have been a riot in the hotel.
That's right.
Hey, they're passionate fans. Could have been one of the Pacquiao-Marquez fights. But
I believe that's what it was.
They are passionate fans, and they come up across the border to go to L.A. and Vegas. In the old days,
right.
It was L.A., now they go to Vegas.
This
yeah,
is a fighting
Mexican Independence Day, so it even brought a bigger crowd.
Right.
But boxing, I wish it would be more fights down here in this Tampa Bay market, Russell. I mean, they got a lot of great venues down here to have fights up there and that, but I just wish you'd come down and promote a fight in the Tampa Bay Times Forum so we can all watch a great heavyweight fight down here.
Actually, there is a fight Saturday night. Our friend Aaron Jaco is fighting the former father of our Saturday night program. Is fighting at the A la Carte Pavilion.
Oh, is he?
Oh, right, Aaron J. Yeah, right, okay.
Right.
Aaron Jacobs
wow.
used to be up here in Philly.
Right. Well, so was his father. You remember his father?
The
Dave
fighter's
Jaco.
Father, David Jaco.
Right.
Right, mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That was back in the 80s, I guess.
Yeah, then both boys were fighters, and now Aaron's fighting and his brother is training him.
Right.
Wow, that
it's
was their founding
the
fathers.
Yeah,
no.
It's not quite the same as breeding horses, though.
No, that's for sure.
Not quite the same.
But I tell you, I just wish it'd be more boxing events down here, like you do such a great job in up in the Northeast. I just wish you promote a couple things down here, like because I'm getting because every time I watch on Saturday night, I get into boxing up there, and I always tell Frank, where's the live boxing events coming on here? So I sit down and watch the fights every Saturday night when I get a chance.
Guys, we just hit that magical number.
Uh oh.
Russell, great talking to you, and
okay,
and
yes, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Great job.
Thank you for coming on, sir. Oh, you're a legend. You're a boxing legend, sir. Thanks for coming
that just
on,
means
sir.
I'm old.
And we do want to remind
okay,
all,
no,
our fans,
no.
all our fans in the Philadelphia, Jersey, Delaware area that there is a huge fight this Saturday night at Bally's in Atlantic City. And tickets can be bought through Ticketon, or can they buy them at the
So you're
hotel.
Showing your age. You're showing your age. Ticketron. It's Ticketmaster.
That's right. Ticketmaster. Sorry.
Yeah, they'll be available at the door. And thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Russell. Thank you for coming on, Russell.
Take care now.
Hey, Doug, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I just wanted to tell you that I talked about you with Rick Vaughn, about your experience with Scott Garceau. I heard
okay.
all about it. So
yep.
We talked about that early in the show.
All right, awesome. Yeah, he was. He's a real pro. I tell you, it was actually fun to do, and I think some of my experience here on the show with you guys has given me that opportunity to branch out a little bit. It's a little different when there's a camera on, uh-huh. you, I suppose, and you feel a little bit more nervous. At least I did. But he held my hand the whole way through by just kind of asking me questions and allowing me to, you know, formulate my answers and everything. And I thought it went well. We did one take, and
one take, yeah. Congratulations.
I'd look forward to doing something like that again if I could.
Can I get your autograph now or later?
This is my secretary has the ink dried. It's we get 60% of everything you make on it.
Right on.
Can
right.
we get your autograph now, Doug, or later? We have to wait till you get famous.
Frank, I tell my wife, half of nothing is nothing.
That's true.
Oh, God. But, can we get your autograph now or later before you become famous in Baltimore, Washington?
I should be asking you guys for your autographs as much stuff as you've done in the sports industry.
No.
So let's have respect where respect is due, huh?
That's right.
We're just Indians. This is the Indian, we're having a good time on Wednesday night. It's like sitting, like when you first came on, remember when you first came on? I said, we're just sitting around a table talking sports. Mm-hmm. We're having a good time. That's it.
We actually use the analogy of a bar, and I think Don would
have heard
that when it's Leo's turn to buy, he leaves.
And Leo would probably say, how's the cat doing?
That's right. Yep. He's listening right here. Yep.
TikTok.
TikTok. I hear you.
I know.
Listen, have a great week, guys. God bless.
Yep. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you again for everything. And thank you. Thank you, Doug, for coming on. It's awesome. Frank, where can we start? Oh, boy.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Frank. I appreciate that. I really do.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you for everything you did.
Thank you for everything, Doug.
Office. Yeah, man. Awesome. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, guys. Well, Frank, where can we start, huh?
Jeez, I'm ready.
Yep. Well, I'd like to thank Lauren Samuels for coming on, Jim Robinson for coming on, and I'd like to thank Ben Sloan for coming on, Roy Cummins of the Championship Tribune for coming on, good friend of mine, Rick Vaughn, Vice President of Public Relations for the Tampa Bay Rays for coming on, of course, Philadelphia legend Don Henderson, Orlando legend Roger Hendler, Russell Peltz for coming on. I learned so much about boxing in 20 minutes. I did all my life. Thanks for him for coming on. Frank, get him on at any time you want. Get him on after that. Get him on after that card next week. I love to hear more boxing stuff up there. Of course, Doug, a resident golf pro, I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania, Purchase of Water. Log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country. Give Tim Baker a call. We'll call him after the Masters, or he won't call this show. We got to get him on. 352-588-5454, the Abbey Course, St. Louis University. Give them a call, 352-588-2016. Tampa Bay Lightning's home tomorrow night versus Philadelphia, 813-301-6600. Friday night versus Columbus, 813-301-6600. Frank, always a pleasure. I'll catch up to you tomorrow at the Flyers game. Looking forward to seeing you, sir. Give your family my very best. God bless. Frank, take it away and have a wonderful week, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, just say thank you. It means a world of good to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffy Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, the Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Payne, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain of the Windermere, Florida Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face. And the winds fall softly on your face and the rains fall softly on your field. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, sun ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yilama. Jesus. And proudly toast his noble fame, whose spirit and with mind aflame, saw wish and strength and length of days.
All units be advised, 1999's response is last emergency. May God bless us all.